Welcome. I am Dr. Thomas Griggs, founder of Griggs Leadership Programs and creator of the online course in Epic Leadership. This is the first in a series of posts in which I will be sharing news and thoughts on leadership, learning, and transformation. Today, I'd like to talk about organizational development and social change, specifically what I do, why I do it, and why I'm not burned out by it. When folks ask, and I tell them, what I do professionally, it is not unusual for me to hear, "Wow, how did you get into that?" It's a good question. I think it is very valuable to ask a person what drives them. Why did they choose the path they are on, and why do they keep following it? So, today I would like to pause and dig a little deeper than usual to reflect on why I work for social change in the manner that I do. So, when people ask what I do, I say, I'm a management consultant, but unfortunately, that description could mean anything from I'm unemployed to I work for the CIA. More specifically, I support the people working to make the world a better place, and I do that by implementing leadership development programs that are intentionally designed to resolve intractable organization and community problems. For example, on Monday, my team and I are working with a frustrated university president and her leadership team. They've been struggling for years with the challenge of transforming a very traditional university into a vibrantly inclusive and diverse community. On Tuesday, I'm negotiating with an executive committee of a worldwide services organization with 10 angry international branches who've declared their intention to secede from the U.S.-based parent. Midweek, I'm working to rebuild collaborative community in a deeply distressed alternative school. A year after it was fractured by the forced removal of the head of school, against the wishes of almost half of the community. By Friday, my team is working in one of the most economically depressed regions of the United States, facilitating dialogues about community development across age, color, and class lines between high school students, community activists, and local business leaders. So, my life is never boring. There is always a new challenge and a never-ending supply of folks who are facing enormous obstacles in their missions to create a better world. Folks who are too much at risk of burning out, and they deserve as much support as we can muster for them. Then the question comes up, why do I do what I do? That's what, now why? Well, I think there are three aspects that might explain why I do what I do. Why I focused my personal and professional life on being an agent of social change in this way. First, it would be easy to say that I was a product of my culture. After all, I was a child of the 60s, driven in the age of Aquarius to make the world a better, simpler, happier place. But my disposition was in place long before then, I think. However, I believe an intelligence far greater than my own was at play even before I was born into this lifetime. That I was wired from birth with a strong concern for justice. I don't think I picked it up in the 60s. I'm not deterministic or fatalistic about it, but I don't believe I came from nothing, tabula rasa, and that I'm merely a reaction to everything that happened to me after birth. Early on, as a young boy, I felt like an outsider because I didn't like it when the other boys took sport in shooting squirrels with a BB gun. It seemed pointlessly cruel to me. But I have no idea where such sentiment actually came from. This sense of justice goes further than a simple desire to do no harm and make a worthy contribution, however. I also feel a deep sense of duty to others who devote their lives to working for peace, justice, and environmental stewardship. This is the second aspect of why I do what I do. These good people are working for all of us, and it just seems so wrong to sit and watch while others are putting their butts on the line to make our shared world a better place. I just can't do that. Where this ethic comes from that insists that everyone does their part again, I'm not sure. But apathy and idleness feel inherently wrong to me in this regard. It would make me crazy to sit on a sofa and watch television with the guys while only the women clear the table and do the dishes, especially after cooking most or all of the meal. No one is more privileged than anyone else, or too good to get their hands dirty. That's part of what justice means to me. The third aspect, I think, is a burning desire and a never-ending quest to invent dramatically more efficient and effective ways to work. In my eyes, an elegantly designed system is a thing of beauty when it embodies these virtues. It makes me crazy to see 40 people wasting their precious lunch breaks waiting for a conference buffet line that is showing no perceptible forward progress, when it is so easy to pull the table away from the wall and feed everyone twice as quickly. Why needlessly suffer frustration and inconvenience when simple functional solutions can make our work easier, more fun, and more effective? Where this third passion comes from, the organizational development piece, again, it is hard to say. Culturally, maybe my strong German heritage provides some explanation. A depth psychologist might argue that I became hyper-focused on organization and efficiency because as a child, I was so hopelessly scattered. I always used to get in trouble because I could never follow the plans or instructions that were laid out for me. In school, Cub Scouts, and even at university and grad school, I was labeled a troubled youth. I was called attention deficient and disordered. In truth, these challenges proved to spring from the same source as one of my greatest gifts, and that's been an important part of my success and my calling in life. I have a naturally creative and divergent way of thinking, a mind that moves very quickly. So I'm good in chaotic and high-conflict situations. I feel actually paradoxically at peace in such circumstances. I also know deeply the frustration of wanting to run and explore and accomplish things while being forced to sit and wait to be told what to do. That's hard. So some might say this efficient effectiveness bias is compensation for my innate habits of mind. Personally, I don't think it is, or I don't think that I'm that simple. In any case, all three of these, my passion for justice, my sense of duty to others who are working for social change, and my love of efficiency converge in this obsession with organizational development and social change. Next, if the work for peace and social justice and a sustainable environment is so stressful, and there's no apparent end in sight to the challenges that we must overcome, why does this chosen profession not completely fry me? Why am I not burned out by it? Well, and I get asked that. These are the most common things people want to know when they find out what I do. I'd say that in the early days, I was definitely at risk for burning out for multiple reasons. One was that there was always too much to do in the world, too much to change, too much to improve, too many people to save. And I felt responsible for all of it. Secondly, there was no apparent end in sight to the work that needed to be done, so it was easy to feel powerless and hopeless. So feeling responsible is one thing. Another is feeling powerless and hopeless. They both can contribute to burnout. Third, people were suffering, and I believed that if I cared, which I do, that I had to suffer also, that it was somehow disloyal or not contributing if I felt good while other people were suffering. That's a setup for burnout. The fourth one was that the chronic frustration that we could be doing so much more, and I hear people talk about that all the time, so it weighs on people, that the regret or the fear or the concern that we could be doing a better job of what we're doing, but we're swimming with our clothes on. So I learned very quickly, it's kind of in random order, the thing about people suffering and me believing I had to suffer too, I learned very quickly as a marriage and family therapist working day in and day out with couples and families who were in deep pain that I either had to figure out how to take care of myself or I had to leave the profession. There was really no two ways about that. And I recognized it because I saw people around me dropping out, clinical psychologists who were choosing another profession within a year or so. And then there's the issue of there was always too much to do and I felt responsible for it all. Let me back up for a second and just say that once I realized that I wasn't going to be any good to anybody if I felt bad all the time, I learned to create the psychic boundary around myself, and I learned to distinguish my feelings from others and to care without absorbing the emotions that they have. And I think that template served me well moving into the conflict situations and distressed dialogues that are now so much part of everyday life. So on the other issue about there being always too much to do and feeling responsible for it, I learned to manage my expectations of myself. As a young man, I saw other people marching, meeting, rallying, writing, and speaking, and doing all the community organizing, doing all these things, and I knew I wasn't doing those things. Some of them were working for the Southern Coalition on prisons and jails. Some were working on poverty issues, such as land loss prevention projects. Some were marching for civil rights and against the war in Vietnam. Now, I did some of those things, but there was so much to be done that no matter what I did, I couldn't possibly consider it to be enough. But to do nothing was unthinkable. So how do I get to a place of being at peace with my contribution? Well, it took a while, but I came to see that it was all right that I identify what my gift is. And it's all right that I can only do what I can do. I stopped expecting myself to do everything that deserved to be done or needed to be done. That was a hard lesson, especially for kind of a typical German grandmother white guy that I was, white guy with a German grandmother. The list of actions that I'm not taking in the world is really, really long, and that's just fine. It's got to be fine. I've become very good at managing both my own and others' expectations so that we don't set ourselves up for disappointment and frustration and failure. And I think I've done a good job of learning how to transfer and translate my own successful boundaries in that regard to the groups that I work with. As far as the stressor, the burnout factor that goes with feeling powerless and hopeless because there's no apparent end in sight to the need and the challenges, I'd have to say that I got frustrated seeing people I cared about losing vital energy, pushing against things that never seemed to move. And so that thing about there's no end in sight, I noticed that there was no end in sight because people were not pausing to ask, am I doing something that we can succeed at? I noticed that they were creating objectives that were impossible to meet and then pushing against them, and they didn't succeed, and then they would feel dispirited. So at some point, I became expert at taking the time to get a definition of a problem that would allow a solution. I also learned and believe very, very strongly that it's far more important to do a small thing well than a big thing poorly. And everything big starts small. So managing expectations to avoid powerlessness and hopelessness and overwhelm, it becomes something I teach on a regular basis these days. I eventually realized that my contribution in the world was to slingshot people who were already up to good things and better at a lot of things than I was, to slingshot them into being more effective. That's what I could do. I could leverage whole organizations and teams. So if I can make more of a difference by empowering entire organizations and healing whole communities than by acting solo, I figured that I was called to do that. I wanted to, and it would have been leaving the work to somebody else if I didn't take that turn to work with larger and larger populations. I had the skills that worked well and were in high demand and were deeply appreciated. So it was easy for me to, in some respects, to show others how to stop struggling and to do their good work joyfully without being depleted by it, and by letting others value them for the contributions that they could do instead of reaching for too much. And when an entire organization of people all do what they can and feel good about it, they get an awful lot more done and they last a lot longer than the people that are throwing themselves into the gears of injustice and burning themselves out. So that's my contribution. I do what I can do. One other thing, though, I do insist in the work that we do that we enjoy ourselves and that we take care of each other while we're out saving the world. The title of the book that I'm working on, it'll be out hopefully before long, is How to Save the World and Be Home in Time for Dinner. And if that's our framework, then I think we've got a chance. I think we've got a chance to survive. Fun and joyful connections with others turn drudgery into delight. And I'm not immune to frustration and difficulty, but I'm definitely playful and joyful enough that we all enjoy the process of breaking through to organizational success. And many organizations and groups that I've worked with have been shocked to discover how much fun they can have doing things like inclusive diversity work. So even doing conflict resolution, for that matter. So to wrap up, I'm a leadership consultant who tackles intractable organization and community problems. And I do it because it brings me great joy to make life easier for people who are working their butts off to make the world a better place. And I keep waking up excited to get to work every morning because I only do what I can do. And I do what works, and I have fun doing it. So courage on the journey, and stick with it, and come back and listen to some more ideas, because from here on, I'll be sharing everything I know about how to get more done and be more effective at it and have more fun and have a life in balance. So thanks for listening, and I look forward to talking with you again. Take care.